The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk UFC, Dream, Bellator, Strikeforce, Moosin, MMA, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Special guest in studio once again is Tyler the Intern, who was actually there with me and the multiple supporters at MMA Day this past weekend on Saturday at Queen's Park. Tyler, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much. It's great to be here again.
Good times, good times. Now, MMA Day did go down at Queen's Park. A wonderful, peaceful rally. I got to talk to a lot of police officers. Tons of media showed up there, raising awareness regarding the sport of mixed martial arts. What were your overall impressions about MMA Day?
I thought it was a good event. You saw a lot of hardcore fans show up. A lot of support from some fighters on the top of the level and some legends in the sport, especially Canadian fighters like Carlos Newton. So it was good to see everyone get out there and support MMA in Ontario.
What did you think of Carlos's speech?
I thought his speech was really good. I was impressed.
Now, Carlos was one of those guys that if you put even Sean Pearson, he was there as well. You put a microphone in front of these guys and they can just talk and talk and talk and talk. So we had to cap it for all of the speakers. But Carlos's speech, Sean's speech was very emotional. He was getting choked up there. When he was talking like that, what were you thinking?
Oh, I could see how close to his heart the sport is and how much he really wants to perform in front of a hometown crowd. And about Carlos's speech, it was very inspirational. Like I took a lot away from it, and I was really, really happy that he came out, and all the fighters showed their support for MMA and the sanctioning here.
But it was just a matter of time before Carlos breaks into something about the Matrix or something about martial arts in general. I thought that whole Matrix analogy was awesome, and that's Carlos for you. He's just a regular down to earth guy that he can look at anything from anywhere, from anyone, and come up with some sort of martial arts analogy from it. That's Carlos. And did you get a chance to speak to him at all at the event?
I did, and I was too busy at the Sportsnet tent there. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but hopefully in the future I'll get to. So.
Yeah, it was a good time. Great, excellent job by Gabe and Gavin, the organizers that helped put this on. Neil Forrester from the Substance Group, and of course, Grant Brothers Mixed Martial Arts and Boxing Gym, he was there in attendance. MMA Expo founder Jerry Chopik helped spearhead this whole venture, which turned out very, very well. And of course, the president or CEO of the Fight Network, Loudon Owen, was in attendance. You were actually pretty moved by Loudon's speech.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Loudon's speech. You could tell he's a serious guy and he takes this serious. And he even kind of implied that there'd be future events. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready to show up again and support this and get the politicians on board. So having him there, I thought was really important. You could tell that this is his kind of event and this is his kind of venue to get everyone on board.
I go back with Loudon, I would say, 5 or 6 years ago. His son actually trains with my original MMA instructor, Shaw Franco. Loudon's one of those guys that's, it's one thing to have your heart and passion into something, but he's got the brains behind it. This is a very, very smart individual that, works quietly behind the scenes, has no problem doing public stuff and getting in front of a microphone as he did as part of MMA Day. But he's a guy that I just completely have so much respect for. He's a very, like I said, smart, astute individual, smart businessman. Just everything he touches turns to gold. And he did mention in his speech that, he was out on Queen's Park before. They had 10,000 people at one of his rallies. And this is a guy that can scrounge up a lot of people and bring them out there. And we've talked about, we had a couple of emails going back and forth after the event, and we all discussed that, me personally, I never want to see another MMA Day again because I want the sport to be sanctioned and regulated in Ontario. But if we do have another event, I'm definitely going to do whatever I can to help out. I mean, I was humbled and honored. I mentioned in my speech, 12 years coming, and it's been a long time for me. I never thought I would see the day that I would stand up on Parliament Hill there in Queen's Park and in front of the legislature on their front steps there and given a chance to speak about, the sanctioning efforts about mixed martial arts and how great of a sport it is. The one thing I liked about Loudon's speech, which kind of blasted my speech, is my estimations based on some of the numbers that I got were, approximately $40 to $50 million have been lost by the Ontario government or the Ontario economy with Ontarians leaving the province and spending it at events like the UFC in Montreal, the three different events, or going down south to support other mixed martial arts venues. Loudon said it was like 40 to 50 million per event. So if you did, that's three events, that's like $150 million. That's a lot of money to be losing in the province of Ontario.
And it just came out that estimates are putting as the total business of MMA up around $500 million last year. So if you take that into account, that's 10% of all MMA revenue in Ontario leaving the province.
That's the study from MMA Payout, right?
I believe it was either Payout or I don't know if it was Forbes. It was something like that, but it was pretty...
Anything that comes from Kelsey Philpott or Adam Swift from MMAPayout.com is legit stuff. And if they're saying, let's hypothetically say, what did you say, 500 million?
I think it was 500 million.
Then it's bang on because those guys know the business of MMA. That is the website that, I mean, I visit MMAPayout.com not once a day, but throughout the day. I have my BlackBerry that sends me updates on all the different sites that I do research on. And every time MMA Payout posts something, it comes right to my BlackBerry as well as our Google Reader that you and I both share along with good old Jacob back at Sportsnet. And anything MMA Payout does, for anyone out there that wants to learn more about the business of mixed martial arts, check out MMAPayout.com. It is the gold standard in terms of covering the business of you know, the fastest growing sport on the planet. One other guy, Jeff Joslin, was there, and Jeff was able to facilitate MMA Day, and I thought he did a wonderful job. Very smart guy, and his passion exuded almost afterwards when he had to do all the different interviews with all the different media guys. I mean, I was interviewed by so many different stations and newspapers, and just it was unbelievable the love and support that we got to cover this event. But Jeff Joslin, really, I mean, if you watched MMA Connected, you got to see just a snippet of how passionate he is about mixed martial arts.
Yeah, he's like a proven veteran in the sport and a great ambassador, especially here in Canada and Ontario. And you know, he's a guy that cares about the sport on all levels. He runs his tournament down in Hamilton. It's one of the biggest in Canada. And you know, I look forward to competing in every year, and I know there's tons of competitors out there that are fans as well as, you know, competitors. And he's a guy that on all levels supports the sport.
What about Mark Hominick? Hominick gives me a text a couple of days before. He's like, hey, Showdown, what are you wearing when you get out there? I said, well, you know, I got to go out there with my blazer and dress shirt and just jeans and some casual shoes to make sure I look good. Mark Hominick, you know, this is a guy that has a business degree, I think from the University of Windsor, a UFC veteran, a guy that fights in the WEC. Man, this guy showed up just looking amazing. Great dress pants, dress shoes, got the nice collared shirt. That's the type of ambassadors that we have. That's the proof right there that a young guy, an athlete of that nature, knows how to present himself when he's going to be in the public eye. I mean, there were fighters that were going to be there, and there was always a concern. Well, you be careful with this guy here because he might show up with the, you know, the skull t-shirts and you know, craziness. No, Mark Hominick is a perfect ambassador for the sport of mixed martial arts.
And what was surprising is he didn't just approach it as a fighter and how much he would want to fight in front of Ontario. He did, but he also brought in like how much it would mean as a businessman. Like, the amount of money that's being lost, you know, through the gyms, through tourism, through hospitality, through all of these you know, sub businesses of events like, you know, the UFC or you know, mixed martial art events, you know, Hominick brought that in. He, as a gym owner, he was saying he's losing money that he could be making a lot more of if MMA was legal here in Ontario.
Of course, he's got the gym Adrenaline MMA out in London, Ontario, that I've been to on numerous occasions, whether I'm interviewing Mark, Chris Hordeski, Sam Stout, also Damian Maia. I interviewed Damian Maia. That's the infamous cage fight and that I had with Damian Maia out there, as well as the and I got to roll around with Damian with the jiu-jitsu gi. That guy's ridiculous, Tyler. I know you train you know, grappling and just, you know, submission wrestling, jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. Let me tell you, rolling with Damian Maia is beyond an eye-opening experience.
Yeah, he's insane.
But he'd let me do whatever I wanted to do. He gave me his back, gave me his arm, gave me Kimura. He'd let me sweep him whenever I wanted to. But at any one point in time when he said, okay, this is over, bang, tap.
Yeah, there's so few competitors on that level in the world. And to have a chance to go against him, you can really see the difference where you can just do whatever you want. And then at any moment, they can take it away and put you in a very, very bad situation.
Speaking of bad situations, like I said, Shaw Franco was there, my original mixed martial arts instructor alongside Justin Bruckman and Antonio Carvalho. And I told a quick little story about Shaw Franco and how much he loves the sport, having to travel all around the world and never being able to have his fighters compete here. The one story that I told is when I used to go down and train at Shaw Franco's mixed martial arts academy down at Yonge and York Mills-ish area, north of Lawrence, south of York Mills. So I'd go in there and, you know, Shaw would see me come in there, you know, whether I'd be skipping rope or on the he has one of those bikes that the stationary bikes, and we do it in between rounds, whatever. Well, every so often he'd say, okay, Joe, put the gloves on, put the mouth guard in, let's go in the sparring room and let's have some fun. All right, well, I remember going three rounds with Shaw Franco and he beat me all three rounds just with his jab.
That's insane.
Like, honestly, and I'd work my combination, he'd be coaching me along the way, don't get me wrong, but it was just like, where is this thing coming from?
He could have tied his right hand behind his back.
Literally. Literally. That's how, and his speed and his philosophy about mixed martial arts and just the ability, his karate background is ridiculous. If you take a look at the fighters that have come out of his camp, the specific footwork that they have and that they use, it's very difficult to fend off. And it's the stuff that he would teach us of that nature. Sorry, when I say us, I don't mean me as a fighter. I mean me as a student. The fighters like Antonio and Justin and guys of that nature that have come across in the MMA world from Shaw Franco have just, you know, they've gone and expanded their own careers, but Shaw Franco himself as an instructor is absolutely phenomenal. And I can't stress enough, this guy, the overall game is one thing, but his striking is just ridiculous. And he would, I remember when I would, I mean, different times when we would spar, he would just switch stances on me, but it was always the left. And if I ever decided to block the left or figure out that when that left hand was coming, well, here comes the right. Oh, I figured that out. Oh, here comes the, you know, the high kick or the low kick or whatever, the takedown, and just the crazy stuff he would do. I can't tell you, Tyler, absolutely ridiculous. But you've rolled with guys that are just on a completely different level. Like, for example, Steve Lin, who you train with, train under. I've rolled with Steve Lin in the past, and he's about the size of my left leg, I think. You know, he's a small guy. This guy would sweep me and mop the mat. He used me and my gi to clean the floors in his gym. The guy's ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember the first time I rolled with Steven. Looking at him, he's not very imposing. He's about 125, maybe 130 if he's lucky. And it's a real weird feeling having someone who's about, you know, 50 pounds lighter than you lifting you up off the floor and tossing you around like a little kid. So, yeah, when you get in there with the elite-level guys, it's really difficult to describe. And that's why when guys go out to their first gym experiences are usually with a smaller person or someone with more experience, and they get tossed around, they immediately want to sign up because, you know.
So they get humbled.
Oh, right away. I've been in there with like rugby players that come in there like 225 and they look at me like,
I'm going to smash you.
Exactly. And I look at them like they're really superior athletes. They're just, you know, jacked to hell, and they can, you know, go for 20, 30 minutes straight, and they don't get it when someone's on their back and choking them out. They don't understand how someone so small can beat them when they've been throwing guys around on the rugby field and football fields.
And that's the one thing I think many, many mixed martial arts and UFC fans don't really understand, the technicality that brings that comes out of whether it's mixed martial arts or jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or boxing or even Greco-Roman wrestling and freestyle, the clinch work. They don't really understand what these athletes are capable of. And these are most of these fans are the ones that boo at UFC or MMA events in general. They just have never experienced what it's like. And I laugh all the time. And you've heard of Richard Nanku, the monkey.
Yeah.
Richard Nanku, to me, was one of those guys. He would just, I mean, taught me so much, and I learned so much from him just in terms of, dude, you're 125 pounds, and you're a mangler. And it's like, you know, guys of that you know, are huge, and they come from, you know, a lot of my friends from hockey, you know, whether it's ball hockey, whether it's ice hockey, and they think, oh, you know what, I'll just grab them and start punching them. No, man, it doesn't work like that. These guys are trained to compete, they're trained to fight, they're trained into multiple disciplines, and this is what they do day in and day out. And people don't realize how humbling it is to have a 125-pound guy school you when you were the tough guy in school or the tough guy in high school or in college, or, you know, you're having a good time at the bar. When you meet an elite mixed martial artist, I'm sorry, you're just, it's very humbling.
And you quickly find out about leverage. When you go to throw a punch in someone's guard and they can pull you down with their legs, your balance changes and you need your arms to post. So people don't understand. They think if they're in someone's guard, they could easily throw punches, but it's a lot different. When you are in someone's guard and you're throwing punches and they're pulling you down, you have nothing to base yourself with. So, you know, you have to appreciate what's really going on. You can only do that when you get out there and start training.
Coming up after the break, we'll continue our discussions about MMA Day in the future, what may happen at Queen's Park. And of course, we will look into UFC 114 and a bunch of other MMA events that went down this past weekend. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Don't wait. Hear it now. This is where you get the story. Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is The Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Special guest in studio once again, Tyler the Intern. Tyler, past segment, we were just talking about MMA Day. One guy we didn't talk about, of course, was MMA Expo founder Jerry Chopik, and his involvement with the sport. What did you make of his speeches and all the different media that were interviewing this guy and all the different fans? I mean, Jerry, to me, is a very close friend, super nice guy. We've had him on the radio show on numerous occasions. His event's coming up June 12th and June 13th at the International Center. Make sure you check out mixedmartialartsexpo.com. What did you make of Jerry in general? Because this guy's great.
Oh yeah, Jerry is a class act, and I really liked his speech, and I made a point of going up and actually introducing myself to him because I really appreciate all the work he's been doing with the MMA Expo and with MMA Day. So it's really good to see. I don't know if I would say trailblazer, but like a warrior for the MMA in Ontario movement, because he is kind of a pioneer in bringing awareness to, I guess, the more mainstream.
Most people don't realize he actually had a bill read on the floor regarding mixed martial arts years ago, literally in the legislature. So he's been doing this, just as long as I have. And he's got connections and he gets the stuff done there. I mean, there was some criticism leading up to this event that, people were saying it's an MMA Expo thing. No, it wasn't. This was Ontarians for Mixed Martial Arts. But it raises another question and one that, I think you and I both want to be careful with how we word this, only because it kind of breaks my heart. It broke my heart in terms of what I was expecting. I kind of knew the attendance figure, where it was going to be, only because I'm the type of guy that anything I do, whether it's business related or anything in life in general, is I expect the best, but I prepare for the worst. So I always said to myself, maybe if we get a low attendance, those that show up will be happy. It would have been nice to have seen thousands and thousands and thousands of people, which I believe one day will happen if we don't get mixed martial arts sanctioned in Ontario soon. But it was a little disturbing to not see many of the people that I thought would have actually come out and spent the day there. I mean, we were simply asking for 4 or 5 hours of your time. And some of the people within the mixed martial arts community in Ontario that didn't show up kind of raised my eyebrows. I mean, what did you think of that?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that kind of came into it. Like, it was a holiday weekend, so a lot of people were probably away at the cottage or with family. It rained, so Mother Nature was against us as well. And there wasn't that much time beforehand for promotion. So I think, as maybe if we have to do more of these, that there'll be a lot more turnout. And, people are lazy. People don't usually get off their butts and get out there. But I think once they realize how important these MMA days are, if there are more, they're going to get out there and they're going to show their support. Because you could really see there's a lot of hardcore fans there. And then once they get the word out of how important this was, then you'll see more and more people start showing up.
So a couple of the issues, the date, of course, Saturday of a long weekend. Even when we were planning it, every one of the organizers were like, but it's the only day we can get that's being okayed by the government. So we'll take it. We'll take it. We'll take it. And of course, Wednesday was 26 degrees. Thursday was 26 and sunny. Friday was, I think, 24 and sunny. And of course, Saturday comes around and it was raining, and it just, the subway stop, the TTC stop at Queen's Park was actually closed. So they were rerouting traffic northbound or southbound. So that was a bit of an issue. Yeah, the long weekend was one. The weather was the other. But of course, the planning. This was an idea that Neil Forrester has had for quite some time working with some of the organizers. And, we all got together about a month ago and we said, okay, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. And in reality, we only had about 2 weeks to promote this event. So again, I'm very happy with the media turnout and the people that did show up. But going forward, I think there are going to be changes in terms of the actual logistics and the organization and then the promotion of the event, because we're going to give ourselves obviously a bit more time. Again, I don't ever want to see another MMA a day ever in the province of Ontario. I'd like to see the sport sanctioned. But until that happens, there will likely be more plans. And of course, I'd like to get out there and talk to all the different school owners. I'm sure, you mentioned Carlos Newton on the way down when we're driving down to Sportsnet. You know, it'd be great if Carlos Newton would come out there. You know, and I think it's what's going to happen is we're going to task everyone that's involved with MMA Day to contact all the schools because, in my opinion, what I would have loved to have seen, and I talked about this with a bunch of guys, of course, Sean Pearson and John Kusulaitis, my partners that were opening up. By the way, it looks like I'm opening the gym September 1st, ladies and gentlemen, in Markham, Olympus MMA. Stay tuned for that. Our vision, we were talking about afterwards, where if we owned a school, it's a business, of course, but we would have planned ahead of time to say, you know what, let's close shop here. It's closed shop. This is a big cause, but every student that we're going to invite out there, because we're going to invite all of them, moms and dads and kids and just students in general, show up there with your, Olympus MMA shirt, whether it's a red one, a yellow one, a green one, but at least that support is there. It would have been nice to see the schools come out and support themselves and say, hey, we're here to support MMA, and hey, look at that school, and look at that school, and everyone's there. So that's the type of thing that I'd like to see, and plus there's other stuff that's going to happen behind the scenes to drive up the numbers, because we want to definitely make sure that Ontario are there. And the one comment that I got from a few people, and I'm having a difficult time rebutting this comment, is, Ontario MMA fans, they're not really MMA fans. They're UFC fans. They want to, if it was the UFC, for example, holding some sort of event, they would be out there. But because it's MMA, one of the comments that I got, Tyler, was, what time do the fights start? Yeah, there's no fighting in Ontario yet. That's the whole point of this rally. We're trying to raise awareness to keep it on the government's radar. We know there are other priorities that Premier Dalton McGuinty and other politicians have to take care of, but we have to keep MMA on their radar, and that was the point. So some of the people that didn't show up, some of the ones that, you saw some of my Facebook messages and emails that I was getting, that was just scratching my head. But if you had to help plan this out, which I'm sure you're going to, what would you recommend?
I would definitely go straight to the gyms and start handing out the flyers and start, raising awareness of how important these things are. I mean, there's probably a lot of fans out there that think it's only a matter of time before MMA gets here, and it's true, but,
1998, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's true. It's going to be here eventually because, money talks, but you can't just rely on people to get things done. You have to actually be there and help with the work and help push it forward because you'll end up just watching it on TV for the longest period of time. And, the real issue is I think people are just not willing to get out there and not willing to go downtown. And you say that maybe they're UFC fans, not MMA fans. I think that's more just about awareness. I think the more MMA events that are on television, which will happen with the sanctioning in Ontario, the more they'll know fighters from around the area, the more they'll follow their careers, the more sponsoring money will be there for them, and the more people will get out to these live events, and they'll tune into the ones that will be televised from Ontario to Ontarians. And I think that's what's really important is the movement to raise, the fan movement for MMA in general, not just UFC.
It's just everything in general. I mean, the business of MMA is huge, and I don't think people really understand how important it actually is to come out there and support it. And it was just sort of weird. But, we'll close this off with just one thing that it reminded me afterwards, because, again, like I said, my heart was broken. I was just kind of like, I really wish we would have had more numbers here. And I was definitely happy. You and I, all of us, were happy with the people that did show up. But how sweet would it have been if thousands of people would have showed up? And I'm sure they will in the future. But it reminds me of a Margaret Mead quote that I've always stuck by, that I've been in my head. I've always had it and just said, never give up, never keep doing your thing. And what she always said was, this is the quote, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. I'll leave you with that. Now, let's move forward to an exceptional weekend in the world of mixed martial arts. First things first, we'll talk about Moosin MMA, that main event between Tim Sylvia and Marius Pudzianowski. What did you make of this fight here? Because Tim Sylvia did win by submission, second round, a minute 43 in, and he kept saying, I'm back, I'm back, I'm back. What did you make of this fight?
Well, Tim Sylvia said a lot of things. He also said that he was a legend in MMA, which I think might be tooting his own horn a little too much.
Well, two-time UFC heavyweight champion, you can kind of give him props to that, but
the UFC heavyweight division was kind of weaker at the time. But, Tim Sylvia will go down in history as a great heavyweight champion, but legend, I think, is a whole different, you know, stratosphere of fighter. The fight, I thought Pudzianowski actually lasted in there pretty long, but you can see the disadvantage of having such a large amount of muscle that make your heart work so hard to get the oxygen to them. And you can also see the advantage of being a taller fighter with a longer reach. You know, he could put it. Sylvia was able to put his weight down on Pudge there and wear him out.
Pudge.
That's an old nickname from his strongman days.
Oh yeah, that whole industry calls him Pudge. That's right, correct.
Or super. I think they call him Super Mario sometimes as well. But you could see he was really wearing on him, and he was really making Pudzianowski work, and his cardio was really, really suspect in that second round. And that's I don't think it was punches that really finished him off. It was his lungs that really got the better of him.
Travis View took out Josh Barnes. Rafael Nadal took out Travis Luter, which is a real interesting fight because Travis Luter lost that fight in 4 minutes and 12 seconds. Mike Campbell defeated Eves Edwards by decision. Another strange one there, but the women fought as well. Roxanne Matafari against Tara LaRosa. That was a split decision. If you haven't seen that fight, I definitely recommend it. Also this past weekend, Bellator Fighting Championships. The fights themselves were amazing, but the three main ones, of course, the first one, Dan Hornbuckle taking on Steve Carl, that Kimura submission just 2.5 minutes in. What did you make of that?
Oh, Hornbuckle has been looking really good in this tournament. I think he's probably the favorite to win because of the next fight, which we'll talk about, I wasn't too impressed with. But yeah, Hornbuckle looks like he's going to be the Bellator welterweight tournament winner for season two.
Interesting. You think he's going to beat Ben Askren, who took out Ryan Thomas in that trash-talking rematch. Now, Askren did win by unanimous judge's decision. You think Hornbuckle's going to show this kid a new lesson? This is an Olympian and a wrestler who's got really good skill. I love this. His transitions look really weird, almost effortless. It almost just always seems like he ends up in a dominant position. But you weren't impressed?
I think Askren is he's leaning a little too much on his wrestling and his athletic ability. I mean, he looks like a really strong guy, and his takedowns are really good. But, you know, someone like Ryan Thomas is probably on a level a little bit lower than Hornbuckle. Even with his limited jiu-jitsu, even though, like, in certain positions, the jiu-jitsu was really good, but there was some scrambling positions that he wasn't putting his weight in the right places, and it was just looking really sloppy on the ground. I think Hornbuckle's going to be able to capitalize on those mistakes, and I think Askren's just going to he's not well-rounded enough right now to win this whole thing.
I think it's the experience factor with Ben Askren. I think there's times when he doesn't have the how do I word this? His grappling is just phenomenal. Like I said, he flows from position to position and always seems to end up in the right position. I think what he needs to realize is he needs to punch more and strike more to really create damage. And that's going to come with experience, because I'm sure he's going to look at this fight and say, man, I went the distance with Ryan Thomas. I should have did this. I should have did that. And once he understands, he might actually do it in the Hornbuckle fight. I don't know. But the striking, if he can include in the ground and pound in general, he can improve his ground and pound. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with, because a wrestler of that nature is going to control the fight. No ifs, ands, or buts. He'll decide and dictate where it's going to go. Now, speaking of just crazy fights, Diego Serrava against Joe Soto stopped at the end of the first round after Soto landed that just vicious right elbow. It was an instant splitting of the skin and bleeding right away. He timed it perfectly, had the balance, and then wham, lands that elbow. What did you think? I mean, I was happy with what Serrava was doing. And then it just, well, thanks for calling. Joe Soto lands that elbow. What did you think of the fight?
I was really impressed with Soto. I mean, Serrava, you could tell he has the experience of a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He was doing all the right things. It just, Soto is a little bit more aggressive. He got a little bit more killer instinct. And Serrava was depending too much on the guard part of his game. I mean, he should have attempted more to get a sweep or to even reverse the position, try to take his back or something, get back up. But Soto was pretty comfortable in his guard, and he was just peppering him whenever he could. So, I mean, Joe Soto was pretty impressive in this win.
All right, coming up after the break, we'll actually go real quickly with the Strikeforce Challenger 8 event that went down this past weekend at the Rose Garden Arena in Portland, Oregon. It was headlined by Portland's own Matt Lindland. He defeated Kevin Casey. We'll get into that coming up after the break. And, of course, our predictions for UFC 114 going down this Saturday at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Share your passion for sports. Everything you talk about is on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. the Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Dream, Bellator, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. All right, Tyler, we're talking off air about the Strikeforce Challengers 8 series. There are some pretty good fights out there. Matt Lillen, he came out, he emerged victorious over Kevin Casey. It was a TKO in the third round. There were some really good prospects coming out of the Strikeforce Challengers series. Is there anything from that event that really stuck out in your mind?
I think there's a couple things we have to take from this event. One is this is probably Matt Lindland isn't the – he's not the Lindland that he used to be. I mean, this is the twilight of his career. He didn't look too impressive with Kevin Casey, who's, you know, relatively inexperienced. But what was really impressive about the card was two prospects on the – I guess they weren't preliminary bouts, but they were earlier
in the main card.
Earlier bouts in the evening. Roger Bowling and Safadine, they're in two separate –
Derek Safadine's a bad man.
Two separate fights, but these guys both look like they're going to do some big things in Strikeforce's welterweight division, and I would really love to see the two of them fight each other.
You talking about Safadine and Bowling?
Yeah, Roger Bowling looks like a larger Uriah Faber. You know, at welterweight, he's off his back. He's not too impressive, but he throws all power punches, and they're all spot on. His wrestling in the clinch is pretty good. And Safadine, his kickboxing was really good, and he took the back of Nate Moore, who's a wrestler out of
Iowa.
I don't know where he's out of, actually. Sorry about that. But Safadine, he took his back, he turned the corner real good on him, and we're talking about a kickboxer here who trains with Team Quest, and he looks like with a few more years, he's going to be a serious contender at the welterweight division.
I think even less. I think even Bowling. Like, Bowling himself was just explosive. Very, very explosive with his punches. He's just fearless. That little weird thing with the eyelid at the very end there, which was kind of strange. But yeah, I think that'd be a great fight, Safadine and Bowling. I think Bowling and Volker are going to have a rematch first. I think that's what's going to happen next. Tyrone Woodley taking on Nate Coy. That was a split decision. It was one of those fights where I said to myself, I got to watch this again.
Yeah, I think I have to revisit it too, because it went back and forth a lot, and I would say it's a controversial decision, because I didn't think Woodley, like, as far as I remember, I didn't think Woodley was winning all that much. I mean, it looked to me like Nathan Coy was the more aggressive and more he was more pushing the action. But, you know, I'll go back and I'll check it out and see if I change my decision
sure.
on that.
All right. Before we get to UFC 114, Dream 14 is coming down, or is going down this Saturday as well in Saitama. They're bringing back the cage. There's some nice fights on this card. You know, Nick Diaz taking on Hayato Sakurai. Joaquin Hansen's coming back to the cage, taking on Hiroyuki Takeya. Takoro's fighting. Miata's fighting. But you have something funny about the Manoa Imani Lee fight.
No, I want to know if the Super Hulk belt is on the line.
What do you know about Imani Lee? He's a big dude.
Oh, that's all I know about him, is he's some big dude. They're pulling out of somewhere to fight Minowa. I'm going to guess Minowa finish him off with like a heel hook or something. Because if you're going to be on the bottom of a big dude,
yeah,
that's probably the weakest place to go for.
Good to see Kid Yamamoto back, although like I think he's another guy that potentially he's in the twilight of his career right now. And speaking of twilights of their career, Kazushi Sakuraba taking on Halleck Gracie. Wow. I mean, what do you make about this fight here? I mean, Sakuraba's considered, obviously, the Gracie Hunter. They used to call him the Gracie Killer, but now he's the Gracie Hunter. And, of course, you know, Halleck Gracie's relatively green in the sport of mixed martial arts. Do you think Halleck can actually pull this off?
I mean, if Sakuraba keeps this on the feet, I think he has a chance. It kind of shows you how much trouble Japanese MMA is, where they keep Sakuraba
around.
Yeah,
we talked about this before, you're right.
Because, I mean, here's a guy who's taken, he's been in tons of wars, he's taken tons of beatings. I mean, he should be retiring as a legend in the sport. Now, no disrespect to Tim Sylvia, but Sakuraba is a true legend in the sport. And Halleck Gracie, I guess this is just kind of the old family feud with the Sakuraba. But, I mean, if it stays on the feet, the last I saw of Halleck Gracie striking, Sakuraba will have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, well, the last time Halleck fought was in June of 2008. It was a submission win. So, I mean, shocker, Gracie submission win. Anyways, we'll see how it goes down. I'm looking forward to seeing. I'll obviously be in Vegas covering UFC 114, which we're about to talk about right now. We have approximately, let's say, we got about 6-7 minutes to go through this full card. What you're saying is you absolutely love this card. I don't blame you. I think it's stacked. You know, you've heard some of the criticism. Oh, it's not as good as a card as I'd like to see. They say that about every single UFC card. Nothing like UFC 108. It was that injury-riddled card in January. People ripped it apart nonstop. And then when the event actually happened, it was one of the best events filled with amazing fights, and all the and the pay-per-view numbers weren't as high as everyone thought, and then people were kicking themselves because they didn't want to see this fight. Irregardless, let us go through this incredible card here. First fights first, Jesse Forbes taking on Ryan Jensen. This is a I think it's a middleweight fight, is it not?
Yeah, it's a middleweight fight.
All right, so Jesse Forbes taking on Ryan Jensen. Break this fight down for us real quick.
Well, I think Ryan Jensen has probably had the most unlucky UFC career. He's been put in there against, like, serious contenders every single time he's fought. I mean, he's fought Talis Ladies, he's fought Wilson Gouveia, Mark Muniz, Joey Villasenor, which was in Strikeforce, and Damian Maia. I mean, all his losses are against top guys in the sports, and all his wins are against guys who are
on the cusp.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ryan Jensen, I think he's a good fighter, but I'm going to have to go with Jesse Forbes in this because I think there's a lot of talk about this kid's wrestling, and he's I think a little bit more athletic.
This is a big middleweight, man.
And I just got this feeling that he's going to be able to, I don't want to say eke out a win, but I think he's going to be able to grind out a win against Ryan Jensen, whose UFC fighting career hasn't gone so well.
Good. I'm going with Ryan Jensen. All right, next fight. Aaron Riley taking on Joe Brammer, the Southside Strangler. This is a lightweight bout. Do you think Joe Brammer has what it takes to take out Aaron Riley?
I think Joe Brammer is going to take this one. Aaron Riley, he's had some losses to some wrestlers.
He's been around the game for a long time.
Yeah, and he's been around the game for a long time, and he's a large 155er, but I think Brammer has what it takes to take him out.
Luis Kane taking down Cyril Diabaty. This is is this fight even going to hit the ground?
I don't think so, and I think Kane's just going to light him up. I mean, I think he was embarrassed after losing the...
But Cyril's a technical striker, man. Long, lanky, he's 6'6", man.
I mean, that's a huge advantage. But
this is power versus technique.
I think after Kane got knocked out by Rogério, he's probably been in there at the gym hitting it really, really hard, and I think he was embarrassed.
One of two things is going to happen here. Luis Kane's going to come out with a vengeance, or Luis Kane might just come out and say, you know, it's that knockout factor. Guys get knocked out, and they're always hesitant to let their hands go. So I'm going to agree with you. I think Luis Kane's going to win this fight, but it remains to be seen if it's actually going to be one of those knockout things. Now, Waylon Lowe, he's coming into the UFC, taking on Melvin Guillard. I think this is going to be another stand-up battle. Check out this record. Waylon Lowe is 8-2. Melvin Guillard, 42-9. 9-3. Does Waylon Lowe have a chance in this fight?
I don't think so. I think the only time we've ever seen Guillard in trouble is when he gets taken down. And if Waylon Lowe is going to stand with him, Guillard is going to light him up. I mean, we're talking about one of the most athletic, fast strikers in the 155 division. And if you want to beat Guillard, you got to be willing to take him down and submit him.
I go with Waylon Lowe submission round 3. I'm just going to go on a limb on that one because Melvin Guillard seems to always be so explosive. If Waylon Lowe can survive the first couple of rounds and Melvin Guillard's cardio starts dipping in there, I think Waylon Lowe should be able to pull this off. But in reality, on paper, Melvin Guillard should be able to destroy Waylon Lowe in just whatever fashion he chooses, just because of his experience in general. Next fight, Efrain Escudero. This will be on Sportsnet as well, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to watch the undercard, Sportsnet will be showing Efrain Escudero taking on Dan Lozon, who's going through some family issues in Boston. If you haven't heard, Joe Lozon, and he actually came out and said the team abandoned him. Joe Lozon and the team said, you know, why would you do something like that? They're, in essence, trying to teach Dan Lozon a lesson. It remains to be seen who's going to be in his corner. Do you think he's going to take out Efrain Escudero?
I don't think so. I think Efrain's going to beat him. I mean, if you believe everything that's going on in Lozon's camp, I mean, his brother's coming out and saying he's training like 3-4 times a week. I mean, if you're going to be a professional fighter, you're going to fight in the UFC, and you're taking on a guy like Efrain Escudero, you got to be training hard. So I think Efren's going to take this one.
Unanimous decision or submission? Or
I think he's going to take him down, and I think he's going to TKO him.
I'm going to go with the decision, Efrain Escudero. All right, Amir Sadala. This is another fight you could see on Sportsnet taking on the stun gun, Dun Young Kim. I'm going to go with the stun gun with this one here in a unanimous judge decision.
Yeah, and Sadala's like he's really good everywhere, and especially for someone with such little experience, he shows that he's taking up the game really really well. But from what I've seen of Dong Hyun Kim, this guy is a serious competitor. He's good everywhere. His submissions and his grappling are great, and I've gone back and watched a bunch of his fights, and I think he's going
to
take this one.
We got about a minute and a half to go through this main card. Here we go. Diego Sanchez taking on John Hathaway. I think if Sanchez can get on top of him, he will finish him quickly. How do you break down this fight?
I think Sanchez is going to win it just because he's better in the scramble.
Antonio Ruggiero Nogueira taking on Jason Brills. Brills taking this fight on short notice, replacing Forrest Griffin. I'm going to go with Nogueira by knockout.
Yeah, I think Ruggiero is going to light him up. You can't take something on short notice against one of the Nogueira brothers.
Yeah, but Brills has the skills. You like that, eh? Yeah. It's going to happen. I didn't mean to do that. I'll be honest with you. I think he's got the skills to compete in this division. It's just against Nogueira, like you said. You don't take those fights on short notice. Todd Duffy, lots of hype that he disagrees with on himself. Taking on Mike Russo, who's training with Brock Lesnar. Does Russo, stop this freight train that is Todd Duffy? Or does Todd Duffy really take care of business here?
I wanted to pick Russo on this fight, but when I went back and I looked at everything, I watched some more of Duffy, and you look at the amount of fights he's finished really early on. I'm gonna go with the hype on this one. I'm gonna say Todd Duffy's gonna finish him.
I'll go with Todd Duffy as well. I think it'll test him, but I think he'll be able to pull it off late in the second round. Co-main event, real quick: Michael Bisping taking on Dan Miller. Bisping is the favorite. I'm gonna go with Dan Miller in this fight.
Yeah, I didn't know that he was the favorite, but I'm gonna go with Dan Miller as well. I think a lot of fans think Bisping's probably gonna win this one, but I think Miller's gonna be able to take him down, and if not submit him, at least grind out a decision.
Rampage Jackson taking, I think it's going to be a decision, by the way, with Miller. Rampage Jackson taking on Rashad Evans. Lots of hype going into this fight. Someone is going to be silenced. Is it the power of Quentin Jackson or the speed of Rashad Evans? I will go with the speed, stamina, and cardio of Rashad Evans pulling off the victory. Unanimous judge's decision.
If Rashad takes a strategy that he used against Thiago Silva and he throws in some leg kicks, I think he could win this one. I'm going to go with Jackson because I think once Rashad shoots in for a shot and Jackson keeps him up on the feet, I don't think Rashad has a chance because Jackson has a solid, solid chin, some heavy, heavy hands.
He's all, like I said, in MMA Connected, he's one left hook or right hook away from sending Rashad into La La Land, but I still will go with Suga to pull off the victory. Tyler, thanks very much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Oh, I always love being here.
There you go. You'll be listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.